Thank you so much for the lovely introduction. You made me sound better than I am. But I hope that today's session, you guys get some ideas you can steal. Truthfully, I think that's what this is all about. I'm gonna share with you kind of my point of view, my perspective, my biases in a project that I'm really proud of that I launched with one of our clients over the past couple of years that I hope can give you a framework to think about social media in a little bit in a different way. A lot of times we talk about social media as real-time or in-the-moment marketing. And while that does exist, that real-time marketing opportunity does exist, we have a slightly different take on what it means to prepare a content strategy to be delivered in the moment, the moments that matter most to your audiences. So that's my spiel. There's actually no more slides after that, so I hope you got some value. No, just kidding. I should probably give you a picture of myself as a 7-year-old. No, and this is just to build some credibility. So this idea of the attention economy that we all live in and work in every day as consumers and as professionals, this idea of how can you harness attention in a world that is so inundated with messaging that it's really tough to stick out. And I just wanted to brag for a second that as a middle child, this is me, this is my poor mom, that's two of my siblings, there's like 14 more of them, Irish Catholic family. I've worked my whole life on this idea of how do you get attention, how do you keep attention, then how do you get that attention to do what you want it to do for you? So I thought, okay, what am I going to do with my career as I'm growing up as a middle child in rural Pennsylvania? Sounds like the perfect backdrop to be a rock star. So started a band, it was age 16, it was very angsty, we called ourselves Holden Caulfield, which is about the cringiest thing you can do when you're 16 and you're naming a band. It's like, I should have just named it I'm Angry at the World. But these lessons of attention, getting people to come, to see you, to enjoy it, and then maybe to buy a t-shirt or an album, I was in the attention economy even in my teens. And then when the band broke up, there was girl drama. You know, the lead guitarist sold our PA system for like drugs that I can't mention. We broke up in kind of like a VH1 storyteller, like fall from grace fashion. And I thought, what am I gonna do if I don't have a band? I was planning on dropping out of Penn State where I went to school as soon as we got signed, and we never got signed. So I got into writing and I thought, okay, this is really interesting. I became a newspaper reporter. And then as I graduated from college, I realized what most college graduates realize, which is you have to sell out to some extent to actually make money so that you can have a life and not be a street musician really begging for the attention. And so what I did is I got a dream job right out of school. I got to work on loghome.com. Does anybody know loghome.com? Anyway, I got into the publishing world, and through the publishing world, I got into the brand world. And over the course of the past, you know, decade and a half, I've gotten to work with a lot of the biggest brands in the world and helping them to come up with editorial and content-driven experiences that delight their audiences and drive business results and revenue and everything like that. So the central premise is why my wife and I founded the company RevMade that was mentioned at the beginning that nobody's heard of. We started it 3 years ago with the premise of, if we can help businesses better communicate to the audiences that matter to their bottom line, we might be able to find a more efficient and effective way to do creative and to drive business growth. So we started with this premise of brands as publishers. Publishing means reaching audiences in social media, engaging with them, and getting them to take a business action that benefits your bottom line. So that's all the preamble you'll get for today. I actually have a question, because I want to actually focus on this one here. Has anybody heard of this logo, Northwell Health? No, right? Cool. Yeah, they're on the East Coast, right? So they're in New York. They are a $12 billion healthcare system. They have 68,000 employees. And they spent about $25 million a year on advertising, and it wasn't working. It wasn't working. They're spending more and more dollars into Facebook, into Google, into Instagram, into Twitter. They're wasting their money because they're basically using social media as an advertising platform. So when they came to us, they said, listen, we have this brand, not a lot of people know about it, but it's huge. We've just merged and we've gobbled up all of these different health systems. Now we're the biggest in New York and we want to let people know about it. So they spent a year shouting that through advertisements, through banners on websites, through bus stops. We are Northwell Health. We are Northwell Health. This is what we do. This is what we're great at. Nobody gave a shit. Why? Because we have 10,000 other people in our ear at any given moment saying, here's another thing you should care about. And so with Northwell, we basically said, what if we did advertising differently? You're trying to build a relationship with the women in your community. Because in the hospital world, it's all about the chief medical officer of the household. She controls 80 to 90% of purchasing decisions. She's a really, really big deal. So they came to us and said, we're spending a lot of money on advertising. We're not getting returns. The board is wondering, why did we hire the CMO to do this big rebrand if we're not getting that recognition that we deserve in our marketplace? So we came to them, they came to us, and we had this conversation about, what if we actually completely abandon advertising And instead of doing advertising, we created editorial. And that editorial would fuel all of our ad campaigns, our social campaigns, our email campaigns, and everything that we do. It was a bold statement. This was a couple of years ago. But we had a CMO who was very innovative and very open-minded, and he said, show me what you got, develop the story that's going to convince me to spend money on editorial versus advertising. I told you that I have a bias coming into this. I think that content is the future and the currency of advertising. How many people are doing content marketing in their world right now? Okay, good. Good. I think that advertising will never go away. You're always going to need to know like that it's buy one, get one. You're going to need to know that you know the game is on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Advertising plays a really, really important role. But for brands that are really trying to develop relationships with the people that they need to come in and do business with them over the long run, efficiently and not with just an ad budget that just needs to go bigger and bigger and bigger to get louder and louder and louder every year, we came with this idea of a relevance formula, where it's mapping the moments where you can be relevant as a brand to your audience, delivering unique value in those moments to activate those audiences, and then embrace the community in ways to scale so that you can actually have a platform that connects you directly to your audience, and that gives you all sorts of revenue upsides in terms of how you market to them and what you can get them to do. So, does that make sense, everybody, so far? Cool, cool. I'm gonna get a cup of water, because I put it right there. Now I'm trying to build some suspense. What's he gonna say next? Probably nothing good. All right, so the first thing is, a lot of people, when they get into social media, there was this whole idea of like, it's easy, teenagers can do it, we all do it naturally, therefore applying it to brand marketing should be really easy. We just have to show up, share stuff, and connect with people. But the truth is that people don't care about what brands have to say. My favorite thing to say to a CMO is, no one wakes up in the morning thinking about your brand. Did anybody think about a brand the first thing they woke up? Maybe Starbucks. It's the only exception. But you think about what kept you up last night, you think about what you want to get done that day, maybe you're thinking about what you want to do one day, maybe you're thinking about, you know, risking it all and going off the grid, but probably not dreaming in branded logos. So that's the first thing that brands need to understand whenever they come into social media, is that by nature of you showing up, it's not a big deal, nobody cares. You actually have to add value. This woman in the bottom right, it's actually a scientific drawing, that's a woman getting inundated with advertising. The joke worked better in my head. But the point here is that whenever you're thinking about social media and you're thinking about your content strategy to connect with those audiences, it really helps to have this reality check at the very beginning, which is your brand isn't relevant unless you can show audiences why. So whenever we think about Northwell Health, and we think about this woman that we're trying to reach, and we're thinking about how she's inundated with messaging, she's not responding to our new brand campaign, and we got to find a way to reach her. So we take a look into the window of her soul, which is a search engine. And we've all been on the couch, maybe you're watching TV, you start to cough, and then you go to Google, could my cough be cancer? Could it be pneumonia, allergies, acid reflux, heart related, hay fever, asthma, lung cancer, from mold, from bronchitis? What causes excessive coughing? Am I coughing too much? What are the side effects of coughing too much? Can coughing too much damage your throat? And I probably have something way more dreadful than a cough. But the fact is this search data is the first indicator of like what your moments of relevance could be as a brand. If people are searching for things online and they're not finding good answers because they go down that rabbit hole that ultimately leads them to WebMD slideshow that tells them that they're probably going to die by the end of it, but that's data that we can use. We use like something like SEMrush.com where we say like, what are people typing in? What is on their mind? And can we start there? Can we start to use that data to inform the content that we're going to bring to Moments? I know we're talking about search in a social media summit, but the fact is that search data, those same people using social are using search engines. There's not two separate groups. So this data is so important because you can start to say, okay, let's see some keyword trends and let's see where we can actually provide value based on what people are looking for. Then let's do a cultural study and see like, what are they sharing in social media, this audience that we're trying to win with? The fact is that there's not a lot of good information online as it pertains to people's health. You have people like Gwyneth Paltrow launching Goop, which was going to be bought by Condé Nast, but Condé Nast said, if we're going to buy this, we're going to need to employ fact checkers. And they said, that's a deal breaker to us because we're full of shit. And we that would expose everything. But the fact is the person that you're trying to reach is searching for things, is being influenced by entities within their space, and is really, there's a lot of information you can get using something like a BuzzSumo or using a tool to basically see what are the most popular types of content that your audience is looking for, and what can that tell us about the opportunity we might have to market to them. So search data, social data, cultural insights in terms of like who are the most influential in the space, and you're starting to get a picture of, okay, I think we can start to serve this woman in a different way because there are gaps in the market. And then if you're a hospital system like Northwell Health and you're literally selling colonoscopies, your competitors, if you, the only people who smile at colonoscopies live in health and wellness stock photo libraries. If you Google this kind of thing, you have all of these smiling people. If you've ever gotten a colonoscopy, a smile is not involved. So there's not a lot of truth and authenticity with all this information, all of this misinformation out there online. And we think about the woman who we're trying to reach and who we're trying to build a relationship with. And this is the stuff that she's sifting through. And so really, as we started to develop a strategy by first seeing what is our opportunity to be relevant, where's the pain point in the market that we can solve that nobody else is really solving, you start to come to these conclusions. And the conclusion that we came to was there's more information than ever before about every single calamity that can happen to you physically. But there's more stress being reported than ever before in terms of managing our own health. So that doesn't make any sense. But if we really look at it, you see healthcare systems with the smiling colonoscopies are trying to downplay. They're trying to sanitize. They're trying to whitewash. They're basically trying to say, it's not, you know, we're gonna minimize the emotional turmoil that is being kicked up whenever you're looking for information. And media companies like WebMD, who I worked with for a bunch of years, their whole thing is we can monetize anxiety by getting people through those slideshows. So where does that leave this audience, this woman that we want to reach on Facebook, that we want to have a relationship with in her phone at all hours of the day? So what we started to do was compile all these data sources and map out a survey that would help us to understand a day in the life of this woman. And if you go through it, these are actual responses from a survey that we conducted. Walk us through a day in your life. And we got thousands and thousands of verbatim responses, and we plucked a few from this. So called mom to check in after changing her medicine last week. You know, click through 4 slides on signs your aging well feature posted on Facebook. Refilled prescription for daughter on her way to lunch. Googled how to convince mom to go to doctor from her mobile phone. Texted husband to coordinate dinner plans. Debated takeout options. Pickled up. So all of these different things, and at the very end of the day, maybe a YouTube video shared via Facebook that's a workout that she's doing. So the fact is this woman is not being served. She's living a frenetic life, and she has all of these needs. And at any given moment, when it pertains to her healthcare, something could happen in her life where she's gonna have a pang of anxiety. It could be pop culture. A celebrity dies from brain cancer. Now I'm anxious. Now I'm worried about that. Do I have symptoms of that? Should I be worried about? The back of the head thought, I need to quit smoking. I know I should quit smoking, but I just can't get my shit together. Bless you. Or I'm pregnant and I have a 20-week routine test coming up. What we started to do is we mapped out all of these moments that cause stress in women's lives. And then we looked at when they have that stressful moment, what are they finding online? And for the most part, they're finding hot garbage. It's just not good because it's somebody trying to make money off their anxiety versus somebody trying to solve it. So we said, okay, that's a real opportunity. What if we created a strategy that kind of categorized these different moments into different jobs that our content and social media can do? You know, there's the shoulds, those nagging feelings in the back of your mind. They come from pop culture. They come from daily life. They come from the voice in the back of our heads. There's the routines. I turn a certain age, I get a certain procedure. I'm in a certain condition, there's a certain set of paths in a life stage that I'm gonna actually go through. I need someone to help manage that. There's obsessions, those spontaneous things like the cinnamon challenge when all the little kids were like eating canisters of cinnamon and like with a Tide Pod challenge. There's like these pop culture obsessions that all of a sudden everybody's talking about. That's an opportunity. And then there's the extreme, the life-changing moments, an unexpected diagnosis, an unexplained symptom, a routine doctor's appointment that changes your life because you find out you have a condition you didn't know about. So what we did, this isn't an academic map, it's a practical one. And this was the key, before we even talked about Facebook or Instagram or anything like that, what we talked about is outside of all the technology, outside of all the stuff that the data can show us, you know, what is this one? And what are the kind of moments that she has that we can be relevant for? A lot of brands just try and show up in social media and try in the moment to be relevant. You know, newsjacking, talking about what's happening in pop culture, trying to make it work for them. But really, it's not about social media. It's about the real person and their real life. What are their real pain points? And then you can get into social media. So this moments of truth, these moments that cause anxiety in our woman's life became our opportunities for relevance. And so we map all activity out of this. Does that make sense? Anybody have a question? Is that all cool? I stumbled on the explanation of it, but whenever we did the strategy, this was like a big reveal. It was like, now we know the 4 different types of jobs our content can do, and we know that women are having these moments in their real lives, and now it's just about creating something of value and meeting them in that moment. That's what we're gonna talk about next, delivering unique value. First though, a pop quiz. The most clicked on phrase in all of advertising, digital, internet, and social media history. Does anybody have a guess what it is?
How to?
Optimistic. It's good. Click here. Free beer. Porn. Skip ad. So that's been the problem for the longest time, right? So people don't read ads, they read what interests them, sometimes it's an ad. That's a quote from 1960 Howard Gossage. That was always been the problem. But the problem is, people don't read, wait, what were you talking about? Never mind. This is today's consumer. It was hard enough to get people's attention back whenever you knew that there was only one newspaper in town and all the men on the train are reading it. But now it's disintermediated. This guy's probably not even filming a concert. It looks like he's taking like a selfie or he's looking like what's going on in his nostril. But the point here is that the attention economy has shifted. And so the splintering of all of these channels means that we really have to be smart about our next approach. And a lot of marketers make the mistake of, if people are ignoring advertising and it's not really working, let's advertise harder. Let's make it louder. Let's annoy them more. Let's take over their screen, everything like that. But if you remember one thing only from this, it's about the goldfish. Right? Weird. Everybody says that people have the attention span of a goldfish. Have you heard that before? 8 seconds or something like that? That's true. Those same people will watch 8 hours in a row on Netflix if it's the right stuff. So the point is, it's not about being shorter, being more interruptive, being more clever. It's about creating an attraction that is naturally going to connect with somebody and building all of your marketing around that and bringing that to social media. So when we look at those different types of moments we described, remember, it's like a practical map of like, hey, this makes a lot of sense. Sure, we're probably leaving some opportunities off the table, but if we can really rally around these different moments that these women are having, then we can actually create something special that responds to those moments. So for the shoulds, we came up with an editorial column called Dear Doctor, where we took all of our experts from the colonoscopy library and got them to respond to real questions that people are typing into search and into social. We published that, and then we bring it to social media. I'm gonna tell you about that, how we did that in a second. Routines, so you're getting a colonoscopy? Let's have a woman actually do a first-person blog-style walkthrough of her colonoscopy, of her mammogram, of her bunion surgery. So creating a content asset that meets this woman who's worried about it in her life and says, hey, we know about this and we actually have a story that's gonna calm your anxiety by showing you you're not alone. People do this all the time. Here's one of them. Obsessions, so there's a lot of bullshit on the internet. I don't have to tell this room full of people. Anti-vax, other stuff, I'm sure. So really taking these obsessions that everybody's talking about and finding an expert that's saying, hey, we're gonna bust this myth and we're actually gonna tell you the story behind the story. And then extremes, those life-changing moments that people go through, a cancer diagnosis, a loved one getting Alzheimer's, those crazy things that happen that terrify you, we actually wanna tell those stories and publish them. We're gonna be a hospital that talks about death because that's part of life. So what we did here was, if you remember that chart of all of those different moments we can be relevant, now let's create some great content. And I just wanna give a quick video just to show you like what that content might look like.
I was diagnosed
what we're going to social media with
just days after learning I was pregnant with my third child. I didn't know if I was going to live or die, and I was thinking about my unborn baby. I was in complete shock. It was such a blessing to see my baby still thriving despite having such a major and serious operation.
Came to the hospital expecting to deliver two babies, and he was leaving without his wife.
Thank you.
So we identify the moments. We talk about, you know, the different types of jobs our content can do as a hospital, as a group of thousands and thousands of experts who are saving patients' lives every single day and going through all of this. Now we're going to have this great editorial to bring to these moments. How do we actually activate that? Where does the social media part come in? We talked about social media listening and finding out, like, the stories that it, the anxiety points, but how do we actually then bring these stories back to social media and drive the action that we want them to take? So just a schematic, it's okay, it's all this expertise, the moments that we're going to rally around, and then really finding and basically going back to campaign-based thinking. So hospitals have service lines, they have to sell products just like any other company. So the old way of doing that is saying, hey, we have a great breast cancer service line within our hospital, and we also do mammograms that are painless and everything like that. You can spend millions of dollars on advertising telling everybody that. Most people won't listen. But what if you follow this moments idea? So we take a mammograms campaign, and we say, okay, we know, generally speaking, who the right target is for a mammogram within our audience base. We want to get people that are young that haven't had to get one yet, some that are of the age that should be getting their first one, and some that maybe they think, you know what, I'm so old, I kind of don't need to get those anymore. Does it really matter? Actual piece of data from our survey. So what we said was, okay, why don't we go back to our moments chart and say, what are all of the different anxiety points as it pertains to mammograms? I realize the irony of me telling you guys this story. It's not a procedure I've been through. But my wife also hasn't. But anyway, so... the anxiety, something. Thank you for just taking me off stage there for a second. So we said, what are the anxiety points associated with mammograms? Well, there's new guidelines that came out that change the age of when you're supposed to get a mammogram and change, like, how you're supposed to work that into your life. A lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of questions. We create that asset. Are mammograms guidelines confusing you? We talked before about Julie Shapiro, one of our writers who actually documented the story of her getting a mammogram so that it would be easier and less anxiety-inducing for other people, and we shared that in social media. We know that there's a trend, that there's some women who refuse to get mammograms because they think it's painful. So we created a piece called Hate Mammograms, Read This, because, you know, that's the should moment. I should do this, but there's something stopping me. Then there's the extremes. This was a story of two women who lost their third best friend to breast cancer and then decided that they were never going to miss a mammogram appointment, so they did a whole thing about mammogram buddies, bosom buddies, and they just started a whole campaign around find your bosom buddy, make it a thing. So then we took this and basically said, okay, with the women in a hospital, the chief medical officer of the household, generally speaking, we're talking about millennials, we're talking about boomers, and we're talking about Gen X in the middle. So let's do three different campaigns against those four different content assets, and let's also layer in some Facebook targeting data based on interest, based on assumptions, based on things we can guess about those different audiences. Let's pump this creative into that machine and give a mini ad campaign for every single piece of content that we produced, which is crazy, right? Because most media companies are like, let's just do this big branding thing, we'll test a bunch of assets, and then they say that they're gonna whittle and watch, and they're the best ones. That never actually happens. That never actually happens. So we actually said, instead of just doing this mass media campaign where we're putting all of this assets in and then seeing what works, we're actually gonna come up with a mini campaign for every single moment that we're going to market to this audience. And it's about five times the work. It is more work to actually do that for every single piece of content. People always ask, like, how much content should I produce budget-wise versus what I can spend budget-wise on distribution? And my answer is always, you should only produce as much content as you can give a thoughtful micro-targeted campaign to. And what we found by doing this, by the way, is that our media efficiency skyrocketed. Our Facebook relevance scores went from ones and twos to eights and nines. Our cost per click on Facebook for as a metric went from like $4 or $5 a click to less than 20 cents per click. So this coupling of really relevant editorial content designed to reach the human in her real moment and then using the tool of social media to actually find people like her and deliver this, even with Facebook's algorithm changes or their targeting changes, they just rolled out a new update today on this topic. The fact is, even if you're not doing the targeting, having the piece of content that is so focused on a woman's life, a moment in a woman's life, is gonna get you better media spend efficiency. So this is kind of like, imagine mammograms, now imagine dozens and dozens of other campaigns and service lines across an entire hospital system. Now all of a sudden we have a storytelling system that can kind of scale to any campaign, because we have an approach, the moments, we have the campaign, mammograms, knee replacement surgery, hip surgery, whatever it may be. We identify the anxiety points around what that campaign naturally would cause in someone's life, and then we tell those stories at scale. So every single priority for us as a service line, we tell the stories around, and then we bring them to social media. But at a certain point, there's a law of diminishing returns because you're going to spend so much money to create all of that content, and you start to think, are there ways we can do what everybody loves to do, which is take advantage of OPP, which is other people's people, other people's audiences. So, remember that song, You Down With OPP? Don't Google what that means. It's the Gen Xers will get it. So the idea of, okay, so how do we invite the community in? We know that influencers have their own audiences. They are a fast track to getting to the right people at the right time. We just talked about what it looks like to create content and then pay for that content to go through social media to reach audiences. What if we could partner with people that already have audiences and cut out that Facebook middleman? Save a lot of money, right? So one of the things about influencer marketing, though, if you read this New York Times piece on the follower factory, a lot of them have fake followers. That 1.3 million Instagram followers, a lot of times is not 1.3 million Instagram followers that are human beings. Or if you've seen the Netflix documentary on the Fyre Festival fiasco, have you guys seen that? Basically, they said that never would have been a fiasco if influencers didn't just hawk this thing, this big lie to everybody. So brands naturally are like, influencers could be fake, or they could totally F us. So it's really, really a scary thing to start to tap into other people's people. So how can The Well do this? How can we approach people in our community and get them into our fold to help to tell our story and sort of market for us so we're not paying for it constantly through Facebook? So there's Jen Rosenbaum, a woman who is a boudoir photographer who got breast cancer. Crazy, crazy, ironic twist of fate. Do you know what boudoir photography is? Who wants to describe it to the room? It's like sexy lingerie photos. So she was all about, she had a business called, that's not the best definition, I know, but she had this business called Shamelessly Feminine, and it was about getting women to own their sexuality and their femininity, and so she would do like really provocative photo shoots with them just for their loved ones. So it was her business. So when she got a breast cancer diagnosis, and she had to go through reconstruction surgery to get a double, or she had to go through a double mastectomy, she had to go through chemo, she had to go through reconstructive surgery, someone whose entire identity is built on this own your body, like own your soul, this completely destroyed this woman. Because it just basically said everything you've built for, you can no longer bank on. And so she's distraught, and she's doing these Facebook Lives in the New York community, just kind of like telling people on her business, like, here's what I'm going through, this terrible, terrible thing. But it was an amazing story, and she has all these people that are watching it. And we said, we want Jen somehow to be part of what we're doing, but we don't want to do what Bombas did, which is like, hey, can you market socks to your audience? She's like, sure, I need the money. And she did. So she took an influencer deal with Bombas, and it says something like, for those who don't know, I love like warm feet or something, I'm a sock freak. And she got a few likes, and people were just kind of like, okay, Jen, we get it, you need to make money. She said, I hate doing stuff like that, but I need to do it for the money. I don't think those programs work. Can you guys do something differently? This is me like saying, Jen, we have this site, we have this program, we have this storytelling thing, we have a platform in which you'd be involved. And then we said, basically, instead of socks, Jen, what if we actually just told your story and then had you share it with the community? What if we gave you a platform that illuminated what you've gone through? So what we did with Jen was we did a three-part series, a first-person true story essay style that we helped co-write with her along with original photography, and the series was called What Cancer Took and What Cancer Gave. This whole idea of it took from her, but it also gave her all these life lessons which she wanted to share with the community. So not only did the first Facebook post of her saying, hey guys, here's what I'm doing, get 25 times the engagement of the Bombas socks ad that we just saw, just as for sake of comparison, but it also set a brand record for the number of HRA leads, people that, the health risk assessment that says, am I at risk for breast cancer? Here are 10 questions, and then depending on my answers, I may find out that I'm high risk and I should go schedule a mammogram or I should go to the imaging center. It was the most successful lead gen campaign for breast imaging ever done, not only at Northwell, but also at the hospitals that they had acquired to build Northwell. So we thought, this is really something. This amazing woman telling her story on our platform. We followed that model that we followed in Facebook with Facebook paid, because it was early on in the site whenever we got Jen involved, but then she shared it organically in her own channels, and then all of a sudden we had new email subscribers that we hadn't had before. We had new visitors to the site we hadn't had before. We had new patients to Northwell that we hadn't had before. And then we say, okay, instead of going to influencers and saying, can you promote socks or can you tell people that Northwell is the best, we want to tell your story, share it with people, and then be seen as the platform that connects people, that cares about these issues, that shows empathy. So we went to Jancy Dunn, who is an MTV VJ and wrote a book about the dynamic of like raising kids and hating your husband, and how do you balance all of that? So she's like an amazing personality. She's an author. Kate Rope wrote the book Strong as a Mother. And so she's out on a book tour promoting that. We got her to come in and do 6 essays about the things that matter to her most. Liam O'Brien was on the Good Morning America. He was the kid that was bullied in a high school in New York to the point where he almost killed himself, and then he didn't. And his mom is on a crusade now to stop childhood bullying. We told that story, and then we promoted it to people that we knew were interested in those kind of issues. Gisabella, you probably haven't heard of Gisabella, but he's an AIDS activist in New York who's a transgender drag queen. And his whole thing is, I'm living with HIV, and I don't want anybody else to have to live with HIV. So his whole platform is go get tested for HIV. We told Gisabella's story on the well, and we got a lot of people to actually become patients. Excuse me, that guy's really kind of an amazing person. But the fact is now we had a platform, we had a reason why, we had a natural invite to bring these influential people in a very organic way, and say, just do what we're doing here. We're obsessing over what matters to our audience, their pain points and their passions. We're trying to deliver editorial value that actually quells our anxiety versus stokes it. And we're trying to engage with the community and be that community of women that doesn't exist anywhere. And oh yeah, it's been brought to you by a hospital, but we don't get in the way. It's all about the community. So that's the end of my story. That's the end. That was my joke at the very end. I was just going to pretend like something profound is going to happen. Thank you. I hope that there's something useful in here. I'm obviously very excited about this. I know it's not the typical social media case study, but that was on purpose. It's like social media will be what social media is. It's an amazing avenue to connect with people, but if you just show up and expect to connect, that's not going to work, or it's going to cost a whole hell of a lot. Bring something of value that's already in their mind to the table, and then you're actually going to find a lot more success in engaging them and getting them to actually take next steps with your business. So that is the end of my story. And maybe my professional speaking career. But thank you guys, you've been very nice. You've laughed at appropriate times and humored me very, very nicely. So if there's any, if anybody wants to chat afterward, like I can give more information on the well, and you should definitely check it out. It's a very emotionally rich project. It's awesome that it's working so well for them, but it's also probably the most meaningful thing I've ever been associated with. So thank you guys so much for your time and your patience and your lovely attitudes. Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of it is guess and check and then keep the answers that were successful. So we have like some targeting presets now that we'll try for different generations. It's pretty much all women, so the gender thing I can't speak to as much. But for different generations, we have developed just kind of like targeting shortcuts for our best performing campaigns, and then we just try and use them again and again. But the other thing that we do is it's a nickel then a dollar. So it's basically on those campaigns, we'll do a really short burst first. With a couple of different creatives, and that's why I was saying it was much more laborious. And we kind of just started blindly selecting interests. Like the golf example, just try a few, hypothesize. You're probably closer than you think. I think one of the other things, there's a tool called Affinio out there, which I think is really, really neat. And what they can do is they can reverse engineer like a Twitter account and see what other celebrities, for instance, or media outlets, for instance, your followers also like. So starting to compile like, hey, if our people are more CNN than they are Fox News, that's really, really interesting. So it is constant guess and checking, but we try and keep the budgets as small as possible. And then on winners, we'll really fuel the winner of one of those campaigns with the majority of the budget. Pretty shitty answer, but keep trying. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it's one of the things I didn't say is this all led to the launch of a digital editorial publication called The Well. So first we started testing storytelling on Medium, and publishing platform Medium, and we saw while we put that through Facebook, it outperformed the other assets. And we're like, okay, there's something here. This pilot is working. So to answer your actual question, it was about 3 months of looking at search data, social data. We deployed a quick fire survey to the tri-state area. We used Google surveys actually to get a lot of data, very cheap cost per completion. And basically what we did, the big aha was whenever we showed the CMO that map, and we can spend all day researching the hell out of this audience, get into the minutia, but really what we need is a practical thing we can start executing on and testing against. So 2018, the launch was all about test and learn. So there was a year of us just really treating it as hypotheses. You know, any individual campaign like Mammogram, that's going to be weeks long, maybe months long at most. But the fact is that The Well as a platform probably has 20 or 30 campaigns now running at any given time. But at the beginning, it was show a very small victory and a very small piloted test kitchen type of thing. And then we showed that, and then it was the media efficiency. We did the math, and we said, like, if we're getting these same visits to the site using this asset for a dollar that costs $25 over here, no CMO in the world's gonna be like, no, I wanna pay, you know, 25 times as much. So that's how we got, one of the big questions people is, how did you get this through? It was putting together a hypothesis and then testing it and then blowing it out. Where you just the same audience, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's very introverted. Women, huh?
Yeah,
yeah, and I think that it's one of those things where this audience exists, it's everybody's audience, but she's an individual, right? And she's having a moment, and she's alone. And so, like, these big trends are interesting to think about, but it's more fun to just test and learn against your actual audience. And then what we just have Google Doc after Google Doc of, like, success. Like, we document what works so that other people can do it. And so now, I said we have 20 or 30 campaigns running around the organization. That only happens because we did the mammogram one with one of the service lines. And then we took it to the other service lines. We're like, look how well her campaign did. And then they're like, what can you do for knees? So that's kind of how we built the momentum. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, pain points can be swapped out with, like, affinities. I think that, like, a lot of brands try to boil the ocean. The well, they got so excited because they wanted scale right away. So they got really, really excited. But I tell people, I'm like, they could have started with just one of those concepts, just Dear Doctor. And so, like, we're going to do an advice column. So for me, it's like, it's thinking about, like, can you develop an editorial franchise that really owns a niche within your niche and is special and differentiated in signature? So I think it would be, like, just based on an insight. Hey, we've observed this trend. People are really into, you know, sunglasses whenever they golf. There's, like, a special thing. So therefore, can we do, like, a whole content series around, like, you know, golf makeovers? Terrible idea. You want to steal that one. But you know what I mean? So it's like it's building a point of view on what white space you see in the market. So, like, search data is a good one. A lot of brands and publishers try and go too wide. But if you can really narrowly focus on one niche within your niche, that's a good way to stand out and to learn and then have a pilot you can go through. But we do this same triggers approach and outcomes. We do this pretty much, we did it with Geico. And the whole thing was, like, Geico is insurance, it's not a product that anybody desires, but you just have to have it. It's literally mandated by the government. So our whole thing was like, okay, so how do we get people to think about insurance whenever they don't want to? So we studied the audience and we found that there were triggers, right? When do you think about insurance? Whenever something comes up in the news, there's a news item where, like, a house burnt down or, like, some, you know, a basement flooded, so pop culture. Or there's a life stage change. I'm having a baby. That baby's driving a car. That baby's driving a car all the way to college. That baby, you know, so life stage changes. Then also when you send a bill. Hey, you need to renew, or you just got into an accident and we're going to figure it out. So basically what we said is, like, okay, those are some interesting jobs that Geico can play in the world, or those are some opportunities rather. So we said, okay, for pop culture, for instance, every time there's a blizzard or a natural disaster or an event like that, questions pop up. So on Reddit, we saw somebody built a blizzard, igloo rather, in their backyard, and they were living in it and they had, like, their Xbox set up and everything like that. And we were like, oh, there's a common trend. Whenever this stuff happens, people do the, like, they build these, long story short, we came up with a series called Unsurables. You're unsure if you can insure it. So your igloo that you built during the blizzard, or, like, Angelina Jolie's lips, or Jennifer Lopez's buttocks. So it's like all of these pop culture phenomenons, and then we said, okay, everybody's talking about this, what's our insurance angle? So we came up with an editorial series, a niche within the niche, called Unsurables. We ran it for a year, and it was actually pretty successful. I thought it could have gone bigger, but then they swapped out their agencies because they had a new CMO. So, bummer. but yeah, so I hope that helped a little bit. You guys are very nice. Is this the California vibe? I don't get it. I'm from D.C., so it's like, you know, I like this. I'll stay here all day. No, I wouldn't do that to you. I'll leave. You guys can leave, too. Thank you so much for everything.
Yeah, thank you.